Hello, and welcome to Not Shallow. I'm Rebecca Collins. There are a lot of necessary evils in the modern world. Taxes might be considered by some to be a necessary evil. I consider going to the dentist and grocery shopping to be necessary evils. I don't like these activities, but I like to eat, and I like for my teeth to not fall out of my head. This week, I'm examining one such necessary evil, building contractors. We've all heard stories about terrible, dishonest contractors hired for building projects they then abandon and never finish, or finish badly, making their customers' lives hell. Once you acquire a contractor, people say all bets are off. Your financial and emotional well-being rests in the hands of a person you don't know or necessarily care to know. But even before you get to that stage where you're weeping over a stalled project, you have to find the person who's going to inflict emotional pain on you and drain your bank account. How do you know who's right for this job? Well, you have to meet and greet. You have to gather bids or estimates. In other words, you won't get to know who the devil is until you interview for the position. And that's what we've been doing this past month. We're interviewing contractors to build a garage in our somewhat unusual backyard. And I say unusual because our backyard was basically dug out of the side of a hill, and it doesn't conform to any of the standards you might expect to find in a city. One of our neighbors has her garage and driveway at the top of a hill supported by a wall that is essentially above our backyard. So she can stand on her driveway and look many feet down into our backyard. And there's an alleyway that goes along the back of the backyard that slopes down from a hill on the street. So we're at the top end of it. The wall of the alleyway makes it impossible for us to have garage access to the alley unless we paid a lot of money to level up our backyard. A lot of money. And even then, it might be a very imperfect setup, to say the least. So we stay in our hole. We have a driveway that comes in from the street, and right now, it's a driveway that stops at our backyard and goes nowhere. This is because last year, when the big retaining wall I just mentioned that holds up part of our neighbor's garage needed to be rebuilt, we had to tear down our garage in order for the work to proceed. And this fix ended up being a 3-year saga, complete with a wall builder who said he believed he was a pyramid builder in ancient Egypt, because he just loved slinging blocks so much. But all you really need to know about the wall is that it was no easy fix. We had to make some compromises, including dismantling our old garage and losing about 5 feet of backyard space to the wall. The wall is built now. Some would say erected. It's not going anywhere, even if the bomb goes off. So now we're on to phase 2 of the project, or phase 45 if you're us and you know all the details, of putting a new garage in place and extending our driveway to meet it. Enter the garage builders and the process of getting estimates. My husband Keith, who many of you will have heard on other episodes of Not Shallow, worked very hard to make the wall project come together. In fact, he and my neighbor interviewed most of the possible wall builders together while I skulked about in the house or walked our dog because I couldn't deal. But when it was time for this new round of estimates to begin, I wanted to contribute because that's the kind of wife I strive to be. So I offered to find 3 contractors and meet with them, explain what we wanted. With summer about to end, with the dreaded wall project behind us, I guess I felt kind of renewed. I felt like I could take on the world. I felt like I could build a garage myself in a day. Surely this would not be a big deal, meeting with these garage builders and choosing one. we'd be done in just a few weeks, right? And then I started to meet the contractors. The very first contractor I met represented a large building company. He pulled up in front of our house in a big rig. I'll call him Ted. The truth is, I don't remember his name, so it really could have been Ted. Ted was that kind of nondescript Midwestern guy who could make some money on the side modeling for stock photography of tailgate parties, or the kind of guy you'd see in a flyer from Fleet Farm showing off the latest deer stands or equipment. When he saw the backyard, he did a double take. "Why does this wall come so far out into your property?" Ted said. I went into the tail of the wall. It was quite a performance, spanning the years spent searching for answers as to who built the wall and when, who exactly owned the wall, and what could be done about it. I told him how our first plans to fix it were rejected by the city. He looked dubious, as if I was making all of this up. "Well, it's too bad," he said. "I've never seen a wall like this in a backyard. Look at all that wasted space on top. You could put something up there. Maybe a table and some chairs." I couldn't imagine dining on top of our wall. Maybe hosting a brunch next to my neighbor's driveway. But I let it go because I decided that maybe Ted was just trying to be helpful. "You could build some stairs going up to it," he said. "At least sit up there. Do you mind if I ask how much it cost?" I never know what to say when people ask how much something costs, so I just told him. And he gave this low whistle. It turns out that when you ask someone to come to your house for the express purpose of talking about building a garage, they have a lot of questions for you about the kind of garage you want. The first inkling I had that I was a major letdown for Ted was when I said that we wanted a one-car garage. Given the amount of space we have, I thought this was reasonable, but I could read deep disappointment in Ted's eyes. The thick, colorful brochure he had was all photos of enormous garages attached to even bigger houses. All these garages were a minimum of two cars. I didn't tell him that we only own one car and that we hardly ever drive it. Instead, I tried to answer his questions. But the only thing I knew for sure, besides the size that we wanted, was that it couldn't have vinyl siding, because Keith isn't a vinyl siding kind of guy. "Okay," Ted said, "I've got this amazing product you can use called Awesome Plank." That is not the product's real name, but this comes up later in the show again, and you're going to find out that Awesome Plank might not be so awesome. He then wanted to know about size of garage door, where I'd want an entry door, and what kind of window I'd want. I said that windows in garages in my neighborhood were really just peep shows for thieves, and so he wrote down, "No window." He asked about pitch of roof, if the garage would have heat, what kind of truss I wanted. "I'm going to quote you for a storage truss," he said. "You can put all kinds of stuff up there in the rafters then. Your kids' bikes, golfing equipment, Christmas decorations." I had said nothing about children, golf, or Christmas, nor my need to store things associated with them. Still, I agreed to be quoted for the storage truss. Surely there would be things I needed to shove out of sight at some point. After all, I am an American, aren't I? Ted wound down his spiel and gave me the brochure to keep. "I'll get this quote to you within a day or two," he said. And then, right before he left, as if gathering the final bit of proof he needed, he asked me what I did for a living, as if perhaps I was merely slumming it in Minneapolis during the week and driving out to my lakeside mansion on the weekends. I told him he got in the big rig, and he drove away. Mm-hmm. there really wasn't much time to analyze what had happened with Ted because it was nearly time for contractor number two to arrive. In my eagerness to grab the garage bull by the horns, I'd scheduled back-to-back estimates. Contractor number two, I'll call him Paul, arrived on time. He was in a great mood, and he said he was glad to be out of the office on such a beautiful day doing estimates. And then he saw our backyard. "Oh, what happened here? What's with this wall?" he said. I gave a more abbreviated version of the wall story than I'd given Ted. "But look at how much space you lost," Paul said. He took out his measuring tape. 5 feet. It's too bad you can't do something up there. Maybe plant something. Use it as another patio." I assured him that the 5 feet did not bother us. He shrugged. Then he said, "Do you mind if I ask how much that cost?" I told him, and he gave me the double raised eyebrows. This was the end of our chit-chat because he took out his sheet and started to ask questions. This time I was more prepared, putting a quick stop to any notion of a storage truss. Paul finished our backyard time by asking me what I did for a living. I told him, and I watched his eyes glaze over. I'm not sure what he was hoping for. TV personality? Criminal defense attorney? "Okay," Paul said, "let's go inside and I'll give you my estimate." I was not prepared for this. I put our large, barky dog out into the backyard and we settled at the dining room table while Paul made out his estimate. His iPad, which he used to show customers photos of previous jobs, was out of power. "Mind if I plug in with your charger?" he said. I said I did not mind. It was hot in the house. Close, humid day. I had not bothered to turn on the air. Some sweat trickled down Paul's face. He mentioned that he and his youngest son were going to Fort Lauderdale that weekend for some sort of baseball game. This led to talking about his daughter just off to college. This led to talking about how his daughter selected her college, a little-known school in North Carolina, over other more well-known schools because she wanted to study interior design and possibly follow in her mom's footsteps. Initially, she'd been interested in a Big Ten school, but at the last moment had a sudden insight that a Big Ten school would be fun and a great place to party, but she would learn more at a smaller school. I said I thought this was a very mature insight, one that I was not capable of making at age 18. Somehow, this then led to the story of Paul's wife, who is his second wife and is 13 years younger than he is. One of her favorite jokes to tell her children is that Paul knew her when she was still in diapers. Apparently, she has her own business, the aforementioned interior design business, which started off as a weekend consignment sale of furniture in the suburbs and is now a design and staging company. Some of her staging clients are very rich, but also very clueless when it comes to staging their mansions to sell. "I don't mean they're millionaires," Paul said, "but billionaires." And she tells them, "You can't sell a $25 million mansion if you fill it with IKEA." This led to a discussion of how Paul had taken over the garage business from his father. This happened after Paul's first marriage to a woman who was an aerobics instructor. Together, they had owned a fitness studio, and she flew to places like New York and LA to choreograph workouts for celebrities and for fitness videos. "You two are still friends?" I said. "Well, when you have a kid with someone, you're kind of connected to them for life, whether you like it or not," Paul said. "She's okay. She's just high maintenance." "When did you stop owning the fitness studio together?" I asked. "About 6 months after our divorce, I was turning the key in the lock one morning and I just thought, this is too much. It was great for a while. I mean, the most beautiful women in the suburbs, career women, used to come there to work out." The kid that he and his first wife had together is now 28 and works with him in the garage business. I got the sense that this kid was a bit of a disappointment to Paul because he'd never gone to college or he'd dropped out. This was not made clear. "I guess they can't all be hard chargers like your daughter," I said. Well, he did give me a grandson, Paul said. At this point, I wondered if maybe we should move to the living room, where Paul could lie on the couch with his shoes off and I could sit in a chair, take notes, and ask reflective questions. He obviously had a lot on his mind. One of my friends, a famous inventor, maybe you saw him on Shark Tank, he called to ask me if he could date my ex-wife, Paul said. I said, go for it. They have a lot in common. Why would I care? Why would you care? I said. I was getting into my role as therapist. What time is it? Paul said. It's almost noon. This wasn't supposed to take so long. Paul's cell phone rang, and it was his daughter calling from the small college in North Carolina. I'm with a client, Paul told her. I have to make money to pay for your college, remember? But she had some questions about a form she needed to fill out for school, so I patiently waited while he answered her questions. When he hung up, he said, I don't know why I'm telling you all this stuff about my life. I sometimes interview people for my job, I said. I'm used to asking questions. Paul took out a calculator and did some quick figuring, actually arriving at a number, which is what we came inside to do over an hour ago, took him less than 5 minutes. I looked at the figure with dismay. How long are your estimates good for? I said. A couple weeks, he said. I tried to work up the nerve to ask him if he could knock off $100 in light of the session we had just had, but ultimately I decided against it. Well, I'll let you know, I said. He wanted to know who else I was getting estimates from. And when I mentioned Ted's company, he said, did they give you an estimate on the spot? I said that they did not. That's because they don't really want your business, he said. I want your business. I said, why don't they want my business? The short answer is because there are easier garages to build than those that are small and also tucked into a dugout. Because lots of people who live in suburbs with enormous lots, also need garages and also did nothing all summer to address their garage needs, and their needs are much more vast, often including things like storage for jet skis. These people are the low-hanging fruit of the contractor orchard, not me with my weird wall. As I walked Paul to the door, I noticed a sag to his shoulders. He seemed emotionally wrung out, but also a bit dismayed that I hadn't hired him immediately. I had to bite my tongue to keep from saying, in a joking way, same time next week. Once he was gone, I realized that I was exhausted. I felt a bit anxious over how Paul would pay for his daughter's fancy college. I wondered if his older son would ever be able to step up and take over the garage building business, even though Paul insisted he wasn't really cut out to be a boss. And what about the youngest son, only 14, who was only interested in sports? Where would it all end? Days later, I met Scott, a builder who owned his own business dedicated to garages. I have to admit, I got a bad review of him on Facebook. Some people in my neighborhood had hired him to build their garage and said he took forever, despite the fact that it was beautiful weather, and they had to really stay on top of him. But then someone else gave Scott a glowing review, saying they could not be happier. I thought it was at least worth the estimate and the meeting. Scott came across like an aging fraternity guy who, just a few credits shy of graduation, dropped out of college. He was enamored with the hops we have growing on a fence in our backyard, and he plucked one of the cones from a vine and smelled it as we were walking into the backyard. "That smells just like Summit beer," he said. "Probably not a good thing to get me thinking about Summit this early in the morning." I walked him back to the scorched earth of the wall/demolished garage site. "Whoa, what's up with this wall? You lost a good 5 feet a yard." "Yeah, but it's what we needed to do," I said. I was no longer telling the story of the wall. He asked me how much it cost. I told him, and he said he must be in the wrong line of work. I thought this made little sense, as the wall was probably harder to build than a garage and would have cost about the same, but I said nothing. You should do something up on top of it, he said, like have a table and chairs up there, or use it to store your kids' bikes, or you could put a swing set up there. I didn't want to get into a discussion of why I would purchase a swing set at the top of a 12-foot wall for my imaginary children. I indicated I'd like to get started instead, and he took out his sheet of paper. We had the same conversation I've had with the other contractors, now becoming old hat to me. When we got to the question of siding, he said, "Don't let anyone try to sell you on that awesome plank. That stuff just disintegrates after a few years. You drive around the neighborhood, you'll see." Did that other company try to sell you on that siding? The other company was Ted's company. Why, yes, I said, they had. Listen, the reason they do that is because they have a deal with the company. They distribute the product. You go to their office building and you drive around back, you just see all the boxes of that stuff sitting there. He quoted me an alternate product, one we could paint to match our house. Me, I love a paint in a garage, he said. You know why? Because I'm up and moving. I'm getting great exercise. I'm stretching, I'm bending, I'm leaning, I'm twisting. It's just like unloading the dishwasher. Sure, you can sit on the couch and watch me unload the dishwasher, but I'm getting great exercise. I wondered who he meant by you. Me? Or some unfortunate girlfriend or wife who took a lot of flack from Scott about not exercising enough. Now, you want electricity out here, right? He asked. I said that we did, if for no other reason than we'd like to be able to open our garage door with a remote, like the rest of America. Yeah, he said. And there's like all other kinds of stuff you can do when you have electricity in your garage. Like some people, if they love nature, they run a cord out so they can have a heated bird bath in winter. And the birds need it. They need our help in winter. Because, you know, like all the other water is like frozen. And the other thing it's good for is like plugging in Christmas lights. Here, he turned to look at me, studying my face, my reaction. I didn't pick up on the subtext. I shrugged and said I didn't think it would be an issue for us. And my thinking was that I'm a fairly lazy person when it comes to stuff like that. I barely make an effort to put anything up. Sometimes I skip it altogether if I'm not feeling very festive. I mean, who would I be impressing in the backyard with my lights? The garbage collectors? Suddenly, the conversation shifted, and we started talking about the towering pine trees in my neighbor's backyard. I started telling Scott about what that yard looked like when we first moved into our house. It was this thick jungle that was a playground for stray cats. This is because the owner of the house was living in Jamaica at the time, and when she moved back, she showed up with a Jamaican husband who happened to like gardening. And he slowly transformed the backyard over several years, getting rid of most plants and trees in order to be able to grow vegetables. If you build our garage, I said to Scott, you'll meet him. He's around most days. Scott asked what this guy did for a living, which I have to admit was a nice change from everyone else who asked me what I did for a living. And I said, I don't think he does anything for a paying job, although he might sell some pot on the side. I don't know for sure, but he likes to stand around smoking pot a lot, and there are always these characters showing up in the back alley, possibly looking to buy, but I have no proof. This reminded Scott of his one trip to Jamaica, which he recounted with enthusiasm. As soon as I got there, I had a pot brownie, but what I didn't realize was that this place we were staying at, like I traded with this guy for, like he said, if you build my garage, you can stay at my place in Jamaica. And so I said, right on. And we went there. And what I'm saying is, like, this place is on a curve in a mountain road, so I'm trying to get my chill on, and there's all these cars going by, and they have to keep honking their horns because they can't tell if there's a car coming in the other direction. And that is, like, all I heard all week. It was, like, these honking horns. I said that did sound like a very big buzzkill. He then told me that he was about to go on a fishing trip to Alaska. Now? Yes, he said. He was leaving in 2 days. Alaska, in case I didn't know, is amazing. Are you going to be able to get this estimate to me? I asked. Oh, yeah, I can email it to you tonight. No problem. Let me just confirm your email address, he said. I said, okay. I said we really wanted to get this nailed down. He said he understood. We started walking back out the gate to the driveway. Oh, yeah, he said. By the way, what nationality are you? What nationality? I said, that's a weird question. Oh, I ask people that all the time because my parents are from like Eastern Hungary. And so it's like something I'm always curious about. I wish I could tell you I had a snappy comeback for this. I wish I had said that people really didn't get to ask such things in 2015, at least not during a transaction like the one we were having, in which I was trying to decide if he was the person to hire to build our garage. It's not like we were playing darts together and having a few beers, or that we happened to find ourselves in line together at the all-you-can-eat pancake breakfast at the Hungarian-American Heritage Center. Besides, I thought his Hungarian story seemed a bit fishy. First, because he specified which part of Hungary his parents were from, and also because it followed on the heels of the thing about the Christmas lights, and I'm pretty sure that Scott was trying to figure out, in his very clumsy way, if I was Jewish or even a Christian. But I don't know why he said nationality. Wouldn't that be American? After all, he didn't ask me what's my heritage or even, thank God, what's my race, but I wasn't about to stand around splitting hairs about word choice with a grown man wearing the equivalent of hiking Crocs on his feet. In the end, I said that Collins is British and left it at that. Was I supposed to get into the German part, the possibly Bohemian part, the Polish ancestry? I wasn't on genealogy roadshow here. All in all, it left me with a very strange feeling. Right about now, I'm sure you're in pins and needles, waiting to see if I ever got my estimates from Ted or Scott. I did not. Even though Scott had promised to have his estimate to me that very night, it didn't come through. It also didn't come through the next day, and then he was gone for a week of fishing in Alaska, during what he said was one of his busiest times of the year. This failure to follow through did not sit well. If you can't email a potential client a document that says how much you charge, how reliable are you going to be when it comes to finishing a garage as winter closes in? My despair was mounting. I was tired of being asked what I did for a living, tired of having my nationality be considered suspect, tired of being told that our wall was an eyesore, but one with the potential to become a superb al fresco dining experience. It all came to a head one night while Keith and I were sitting on the couch. A mini breakdown. A garage existential crisis. All this meeting and talking. What did it all amount to? Nothing. Keith calmed me down. We were in this together. And it was just a garage. We'd been through much tougher stuff. The problem is that when you're dealing with contractors, it's all too easy to lose perspective. He offered to help. He would contact yet another garage builder, and he would meet with them and get the estimate. That way, we'd have something to compare with Paul's estimate, and that, in theory, would make me feel better. True to his word, he went online the next day and found Jeb. We'll be right back. So now I'm here with Keith. Hi, Keith.
Hey, how's it going?
So we're here to talk about Jeb the Garage Builder. And you found Jeb online, and I guess it was pretty easy to set up a 7 a.m. appointment with him. So
it actually, it wasn't that easy to set up a 7 a.m. Jeb, for a man who makes his living getting internet referrals, Jeb made it pretty tough to make contact.
Right.
I had to send in an internet form first. He had his website had a form, and there was no response to that. And I was getting panicky because I had told you that I would find somebody. So I called him, left a message, then got this call back like, "Oh yeah, you're the guy that sent in that form. Yeah, I was gonna call you. Yeah, hey, how's it going?"
Oh my.
Yeah.
So then you did though get an appointment for 7 a.m.
Yes, he was gonna squeeze us in before another job.
Right. And I wasn't going to be a part of this. I was going to, I guess, stay hiding in the house or walk the dog at this time. My two usual favorite activities for when a contractor shows up.
What else can you do?
Right. But then at the last minute, I felt incredibly guilty for leaving you to the wolves. So I came out. And I want to say that my first impression of Jeb was just that he was dirty.
He was dirty. He had...
like, really dirty.
I mean, you know, we caught him. It was 7 a.m. He couldn't have been doing much before this. And his shirt was filthy.
His legs were dirty.
He had, like, crap all over his face.
Right. He had, like, mud on his legs from the day before. Yeah. So it's like he slept in the park, maybe, and then just, like, rolled up.
And ate a glazed donut and kind of smeared it on his face.
And his hair was standing, it had like those, that was like pillow rooster tails where it was just standing straight up.
He looked like a Civil War general.
And I can make a lot of, concessions for a contractor. I don't think they need to be really clean and buttoned up, but this was just, I was beyond good taste.
No.
So, the thing that really stood out to me about Jeb is that nothing in our yard was really to his liking.
Right, but wasn't that the case with all the contractors?
Yeah, he didn't like the wall. He didn't like how much space we had lost to the wall, like all the others of them. The one thing I did like about him is he didn't have any suggestions for how we could use that space at the top of the wall.
Jeb was a man who just accepted what was in front of him and said, "This is what I have to work with."
Kind of. We got a lot of flack about where our fuse box is located.
My God, yeah.
We spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah, so he's standing, staring at the fuse box while Freya just loses her shit standing in the kitchen barking at him.
Right.
And he's just like, "Well, no, I need to give this fuse box a good ponder. Let me think this through."
Right, and then I was pointing stuff out to him. Like, now I'm the old pro. And he's saying, like, "Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah." And we ask if, you know, so finally we get down to it. And we ask him, "Can you mail us?"
Well, no. One thing you're cutting out that's important was he asked us what garage dimensions we wanted. And we gave him a firm number. And I think it was 22 by 16. And then we talked about, well, maybe we should shift it 2 feet one way or the other, and so maybe it should be 20 by 18 or something. And after we did that to him, that broke his brain, and just the dimensions of the garage just were free floating then, and it was a different number every time
did not instill confidence.
No,
I wasn't sure what we were going to end up with then. Was it going to be like a round hut
or some kind of deconstructivist architecture? It's just a big question mark. The shingles on top.
Right. So we finally get semi-close to an agreement of what we want on a garage. And then we say, "Can you email this to us?"
And he just looks baffled.
Well, I thought he looked panicked.
Yeah.
He's
like, "Well, I could call you. Usually I..."
He said, I prefer mail.
Yes.
Which... I haven't heard anyone say that in 5 years.
When he said that, 10 years. That was another case where I was so surprised. I didn't know how to respond to that. I just took it like, okay.
And then he said, because I write out this list of places I've done so you can go and see, go around and look at the work I've done.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, he should just have that list typed up, ready to go.
Yes.
So I think he said he would try. He would try to email.
I don't think he even put the try out there up front. Maybe he did.
I think he said he would try, and then we just kind of said, we're going to get it in the mail.
Yeah.
That's that.
Seems right.
But then Jeb kind of surprised you.
Well, so yeah, he calls me and says, you know, I think you're Mr. Web guy. I think I'm gonna make you the guinea pig for this electronic submission thing. I'll email you the form. There's one thing though. So when these web forms come in, I just print them off and look at it. And so I got your phone number. I don't have all your email address. Can you finish this out for me? Here's what I got. I've got your name. I got Keith Pilley at GMAI. And what's the rest of it?
So he had never heard of Gmail.
Apparently not.
Right. But he didn't get it to you the night he called.
No. Well, he warned me about that. He's like, right? Well, I'll try to get it to you tonight, but I can't promise nothing. The Republican debate's on. I got to see that. I can't miss that.
Right. Can't multitask. Need to stay focused.
That's right.
I kind of wish you would have asked him who was his candidate.
I know.
But that would have really maybe pushed things over the edge.
Well, and there's no way we're going to get that information and be happy with it.
Right. So we did get the emailed estimate.
We did.
The next day.
Yes.
He did it.
Yes. He printed out a bunch of drawings and then penciled on them and scanned them.
Scanning, that's even taking it up a notch.
I know. The list of properties was handwritten.
Handwritten, scanned, and sent to us. Yeah. Now, why couldn't he type that into the body of the email?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Right. And the bottom line was that Jeb was pretty cheap.
Jeb was very cheap. Like thousands and thousands of dollars cheaper than everyone else. We could have Jeb build our garage and buy a couple of used mopeds to put in the garage for less than what the
or a jet ski.
Yeah.
In all good sagas, there is a late-breaking twist to this story. One Friday afternoon, I was at work and my phone started ringing. The number was vaguely familiar, but I let it go to voicemail. It was Scott, back from Alaska, and wondering why he'd never heard from me. Maybe the estimate he'd sent before he left on vacation had gone into my spam filter. I checked my spam filter. There was no email from Scott. Of course there wasn't, because no email had ever been sent. Here's what happened. Scott didn't bother to do the estimate before he left. All he could think about were those sweet, sweet rivers teeming with fish in Alaska. Live for today, Scott thought. But now Alaska is over. Oh, shit. Winter is coming. He doesn't have enough jobs lined up. Well, wait. He could always call that woman, the one with the curly dark hair who said she didn't put up Christmas lights. Jewish money, atheist money, Islamic money spends just as good on a cold January night. No contractor in the history of contracting has called someone up just to say, have you checked your spam filter for my estimate? As we learned with Jeb, even emailing an attachment is still a new thing, much less being worried about a spam filter. But I called him back. I said, I haven't received anything from you. He said that was very weird and quickly offered to send it. He confirmed my email address again. Yes, I said, That's the email address I gave you when we met. How was Alaska? Alaska was amazing, he said. He emailed me. It came through immediately. I thanked him, got off the phone, and opened his attachment. So, who gets to build our garage? Well, I think life is more interesting when there's some mystery to it, don't you? Sometimes it's just more fun to wonder. As always, thank you for listening. Until next time, I hope all your building projects go exactly according to plan. And if you don't have one going currently, you should really think about what you want to do with all that space at the top of your wall. Can't stop thinking that something you said. And if you wait any longer, I'll be turning up dead. And I'm not supposed to open.